calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. On Monday mornings here, after we chant the names of the women ancestors, we say, "Now we have dedicated our practice to the great women teachers who have encouraged open-hearted devotion to the all-inclusive way. May our life reveal their compassion. Thankfully, let us honor their true being." And that phrase, open-hearted devotion to the all-inclusive way, is what I would like to talk about. I feel like overall in Zen, we kind of, well, it's a combination of having a bad rap and actually having kind of a sternness and tendency to talk a lot about concepts like emptiness and no self. We talk about zazen and dropping off body and mind, and we study conduct and precepts, or sometimes in a talk we take up a koan or a specific or a sutra. And what I want to talk about tonight is something that's not so typical of a Zen talk, and that is devotion. Devotion and just love of this way. Because that's both what I'm feeling and what I'm needing to talk about. So I think most of us, when we have the opportunity to give Dharma talks, tend to bring in, you know, kind of what we're needing, what we're studying, but also what's alive in us at the time. And so my theme of love for the Dharma and the Sangha and the Buddha way is what's alive in me right now. And love of the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain as they move across the landscape. So I want to talk a little bit about devotion and share what a few Zen teachers have said about devotion. Zen's often seen as almost the opposite of a devotional spiritual path, if by devotion we mean consecrating one's life to the divine or celebrating the love of a divine being. And I think this impression falls apart quickly to any of us who really engage in open-hearted practice. So it's a little harder to see the devotion, but I think that over time we feel it, and it's something that grows in us. So here are some words. I'll share some words from Reb Anderson about devotion. "The ceremonial forms are opportunities for persons to embrace and be embraced by the inconceivable totality of Zazen. We can't conceive of it. We can't actually do it by our own power. However, we can be devoted to Zazen and be embraced by this amazing reality. This devotion is a form of compassion. We devote ourselves to meeting life as it presents itself. This requires courage, and our vow is to be intimate with each moment, no matter what it brings. Sometimes we're able to offer ourselves in this way, and sometimes we are not. However, the commitment, our vow, is demonstrated by our efforts. And Zazen is the practice to which we return over and over. This is devotion." And it's an experience, you know. It's not conceptual, and it's the experience of this open-heartedness that keeps me coming back to the Zendo. I don't really feel like I get answers to big questions. but a feeling rather of being in alignment, a feeling of being in accord. And I call that an experience of living my true life. That's kind of how I see it. And somehow, practice brings me joy even when it's hard and kind of I show up and all I am is mad or distracted or bored. That's a good one that comes up, especially during sesshin. But practice brings me joy. Being in the Zendo brings me joy even under those circumstances. And so I want to talk about that feeling a little bit and just talk about happiness. I think I think we don't so much focus on how the truth that beings want to be happy. We want to be happy. And somehow I feel like there's a misconception that that means attending to the self at the expense of others. And to me, if I think about what makes me happy, if I sit with what makes me happy, it's very much not that. It's kind of the opposite of that. So I'd like to take just a minute and ask you to just be quiet and think about and turn your attention to what makes you happy. What the feeling is and what evokes that happiness in you. So without people raising hands, could people just share and call out what makes you happy?
2-year-old birthday today.
Yeah. And what's the feeling? That
just joy watching her be herself and do what she does. Uh-huh.
What makes you happy?
Being in the studio and disappearing. Mm-hmm. Walking in the woods.
Yeah.
Being plugged into the universe.
Yes. Yeah.
Play.
When things are effortless.
Effortless. I hear a lot of descriptions of the Buddha way. To me, this is the Buddha way. Some of my descriptions are connection. Connection with nature or connection with other beings, the expansiveness of heart that one feels with a 2-year-old, or gratitude and kindness, intimacy with our life and experience, ease, relaxation. So I think that although most of the time, or a lot of the time, I look for happiness in all the wrong directions, you know, because we get confused about what makes us happy. But the Dharma makes me happy, and this practice makes me happy, because it is all those things that we were just talking about. And I think that, like many of us, I'm always studying a number of things in the Dharma. I've been studying vow and a number of things, but this topic I think I particularly wanted to bring up because I've been having a hard time. It hasn't been easy for me lately. I'm in this transition phase in my life with a lot of kind of, what am I doing here? And just confusion. I kind of feel like I'm walking in the dark a lot, just walking in the dark. And so I kind of have that feeling, and bring in for myself my wish to be happy and for you and all beings to be happy. So it's very helpful to look at what that really is. So one of the manifestations of my kind of turbulent time is that I haven't been sleeping well. So I was working on this talk and thinking about what I wanted to say, and I had been up for a couple hours. It was 2 or 3 in the morning, and so I got up and I went on the computer and listened to a talk by Mel Weissman on the Ehe Koso Hotsugon Mon, which he translates, I love this, as Old Dogen's Practice of Faith in the Dharma. And as happens, I think, in all of our lives, it was just a beautiful thing because some of the things he said were as if he were talking to me and my questions. And one of the Ehe Koso Hotsugon Mon starts with this vow, it's with Old Dogen's great vow. We vow with all beings from this life on throughout countless lives to hear the true Dharma, that upon hearing it, no doubt will arise in us, nor will we lack in faith. And I'm going to come back to this question of hear the true Dharma. What did we just chanted? We vow that upon... No, what did we just chant? Is rarely met with, even in 100,000. Having it to see and listen to, remember and accept, I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. So at the beginning of Mel's talk, he's about the Ehe Koso Hotsugon Mon. He's reflecting on inspiration. And he says this, he says, inspiration brings us to practice, which is to say, and I thought this was very beautiful. Inspiration brings us to practice, which is to say, enlightenment brings us to practice. For Dogen and Suzuki Roshi, Mel says, enlightenment is not the end of practice, but the beginning of practice. We have some inspiration, some enlightenment, so we begin to practice. We begin to practice and see what happens, and we practice for a while, and then at some point, we lose our inspiration. Even when we don't have inspiration, if we know how to continue practice in the dark, inspiration will appear again. Having to walk through the dark is important. To me, this is still Mal, to me, this is the body of faith, the mind of faith. When your inspiration fades, your faith keeps you going, and then you come out the other side. So we vow to practice the Buddha way, and we keep showing up. So in this sense, the vow supports my devotion of the way, and the devotion to the way supports the vow. The vow gets my butt on the cushion, and then that gives me access to my open-hearted, to that open-hearted feeling and to my love of the practice. So with this doubt and uncertainty, we just keep practicing and we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and we bring all our uncertainties and attachments and our problems, and then they show up and we bring them here, but they're in this context of all these words that we just mentioned that bring us joy. That we bring them here in this context of connection with others and expansiveness of mind and intimacy with our experience and generosity and that confusion is just held. So a little bit more on one of the questions I was looking at is how does vow and taking refuge nurture this inspiration? I know that in one of our study groups, people are studying that Living by Vow by Shohaku Okumura, and it's a book that many people know. It's a really beautiful book, and he's want to look a little bit about what he says about taking refuge. He says that when we become Buddhists, we vow to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and then he looks at each one of those. What we chant is we say, I take refuge in Buddha before all beings. And his translation is, I take refuge in Buddha vowing with all sentient beings, immersing body and mind deeply in the way, awakening true mind. And he talks about two aspects of true mind. One is just the mind, the true mind of waking up from the dream, which I like to call the dream of the world according to me, that dream. And then the other aspect of true mind as the mind of compassion, realizing interconnection. And this realizing interconnection, he says, we have to awaken to the reality that we live together as knots on Indra's net. And this, again, it's like bringing me back to that open-hearted feeling, that happiness of feeling connected, not feeling separate, not feeling isolated, but feeling connected. And I take refuge in Dharma, vowing with all sentient beings, entering deeply the merciful ocean of Buddha's way. So the two meanings of Dharma that Shohaku talks about in this book, one is our study, and we all know that, you know, Dharma is the sutras, the teachings, and we study the Dharma, but he also talks about the broader way that we hold Dharma as the world, the manifest world as it is, the true world as it is, before it becomes the world according to me. So I want to read you a little bit the way he expresses that. He says, in a chapter of Shobogenzo titled San Sui Kyo, Mountains and Waters Sutra, Dogen Zenji wrote, these mountains and waters of the present are the manifestation of the way of the ancient Buddhas. This implies that the reality of all beings is itself a sutra. Not only the mountains and waters, but also the birds singing, the sun shining, and everything happening around us are sutras teaching us the reality of being. They teach impermanence and interdependence. Nothing lasts forever. Everything is always changing, and there is no fixed ego or substance. All beings in the universe teach this reality, but we don't listen. We don't really see it. We think, I want to do this or I wish to do that, and we are blind to the reality of impermanence and interdependence. The phrase, deeply entering the teaching, doesn't require that we read all the Buddhist texts, although reading is an important part of entering the teachings. The deeper meaning is really to awaken to the reality before our eyes, the reality that we actually live. So everything happening around us, our sutras teaching us the reality of being, is evokes in me the expansiveness, that open-heartedness that makes me happy. This is basically my case for how this all is really a joyful practice. So I take refuge in Sangha, vowing with all sentient beings, bringing harmony to everyone, free from hindrance. So one more reading from Shohaku. The vow continues, vowing with all sentient beings, bringing harmony to all. The phrase bringing harmony is a translation of the Japanese word tori, which means unify. Buddhist Sangha members are unified by the Dharma. To have a community instead of a collection of individuals, to have harmony, we need something that unifies. To make soup, we chop the ingredients and put them in a pot, then add seasoning and cook it until the individual flavors blend to make one taste. Similarly, we need to cook ourselves and make these individuals into one community with one taste, the taste of Dharma. Harmony unifies a collection of individuals into a community in which we can take refuge. The next phrase is completely without hindrance. With harmony and unity, there is no hindrance. When individuals think me first, endless problems and obstacles arise. But when we wake up to impermanence and egolessness and share the life of this moment, there is no hindrance. Of course, there are still difficulties to overcome, but with harmony, we can work on them. If we have discord, we cannot. This is the meaning of Sangha and of taking refuge in the three treasures. So I'd like to return again and talk a little bit more about the idea of hearing the true Dharma. The idea of everything happening around us as sutras teaching us the reality of our lives. During this winter intensive that Chuck and I attended at Green Gulch, Reb talked about wholehearted listening. Wholehearted listening, and he talked about it in a way that was so expansive. He said that we train in wholehearted listening so that we can hear the true Dharma in the cries of the world. And taught that this practice of wholehearted listening is Avalokiteshvara practicing Prajnaparamita. The practice of Prajnaparamita is to see everything that appears as an opportunity to listen, no matter what comes. All are opportunities to listen and observe. Everything in the phenomenal world is a precious mirror for us to observe wholeheartedly and see the Dharma, hear the Dharma. The mirror is showing us who we are. Wholehearted listening is listening that is not ignoring and not grasping, not turning away and not touching. And he said another thing that's kind of something to sit with for a long time and see, you know, discover what it means. But it resonates so much with me and with this exploration of love of the Dharma. And what he said was, you don't have to like what appears in karmic consciousness, but you still have to love it. So this is one last quote from Living by Vow, and then I'd like to have a little bit of discussion. And I told you it would be a short talk, so I'm almost done. We can make a peaceful, stable foundation for our lives, says Shohaku. It's called nirvana. It's not a particular state or condition of our minds, but rather a way of life based on impermanence and egolessness. So sustained by that peaceful, stable foundation, I'm pretty happy. And I say, please, Nanette and all others who want to be happy, hear the true Dharma of the wild geese, which our new friend and visitor said was one of her joys, and one is one of my true joys, is to listen to the world. So I'd like to see if anyone has anything they want to bring up about this. Non-intellectual kind of poking around at why we might love this. Nettie.
Thinking about the word devotion. And noticing myself that the more I come here and feel that the Dharma actually does chip away at our delusions, like engaging with the Dharma does, I feel so much gratitude to everybody here, but then I just want to keep on coming here to be part of supporting it, you know, so it's just like a natural devotion seems to, as I was thinking about the word, it unfolds out of gratitude, you know, this sense of gratitude that this place exists and that the Dharma is here and that people are embodying it and making it possible for other people to engage with it. And then just feel this love for the people who are doing that and just want to come here and join in for ourselves but for them too, you know, because every time there's a new person, that's a benefit to everybody else. So turning up benefits everybody. So that gratitude becomes devotion.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Patrick.
Well, one thing Zen is famously devoted to is the lineage of our teachers and ancestors. And you know, you hear chant all of our ancestors, you know, going back to Shakyamuni Buddha every week. Some centers, they do it every day. You know, we chant 120 names or more. And it's got kind of a nice swing to it. Acharya Mahapajapati, Acharya Amita, Acharya Yasodhara. You know, so it's a little kind of a devotional dance that we do. And, you know, even though most of them are ancient and I don't have much of a relationship with them. I mean, I know the last three, and, you know, we chant Catherine Dennis's name, the abbot here who's establishing Zen practice in America, and now they have international followings. And so I just imagine that, those more ancient ancestors were just like them, you know, in their little corners of the world, just keeping this practice going passing it on to the next generation of meditators. So it really takes on a real human form when I think of the ancestors that I actually know and look at the fruits of their practice, which is sitting right here on School Street. So that's how I can connect with a devotional practice, even though the sitting is following the breath, dropping body in line.
Thank you. I have to confess, I'm kind of halfway there when it comes to the ancestors. And it's so interesting. I can think about, I know some of their stories, and then I can think about how much they gave, but that doesn't really do the kind of heart stuff for me. And I'm really surprised how slowly, inevitably, there's certain, like, this devotional aspect has kind of crept in for me. And I know it's different for everyone. I was reading a couple articles everything I read was by, they were definitely by Zen priests and practitioners and some San Francisco Zen Center, some in other lineages. And they really talked about this kind of that many people at first come to Zen kind of because it doesn't have that aspect. It's not asking you to take things on faith. And the Buddha always said, don't believe anything I say. You know, you have to try it on. You have to discover for yourself. And so I couldn't really, like, and the stories are so weird. You have to admit, the ancestor stories are really weird. You know, cutting off arms and...
One of them was followed around by 500 wild geese. take
that one off. So I brought up my own little resistance, which, you know, I love to chant the ancestors, and it's just become, I can't explain it. I can't tell you why I have a different feeling now. But Mel talks about this in his talk. And I always wondered, the part of the Eheko Soho Tsuganman, we like ask the ancestors to remove hindrances so that we may practice the way without in their compassion. And it never made sense to me. It's like, how are the ancestors going to remove my hindrances? You know, I didn't really resonate with that. And he talks about it in an interesting way. He... related to this kind of walking in the dark, we study the ancestors and we study their teachings, and then we live our lives and we practice and we study some more, and there's this kind of way that, you know, we don't really figure it out, we just live these things, and then we study and we live and we study and we try it on. And then we come and we sit and we're not inspired and we're, you know, suffering. And he said, and then, and we don't know how, I'm looking at you, Sally, because he gave an example of an artist. You're working on a piece and you're stuck and you lost your inspiration and you don't know where you are. And you just come back to the studio, or maybe you put it away. And somehow it works. It still works on you. And the teachings still work on you. And he said, this is the ancestors. This is his way of saying, this is the ancestors removing hindrance. And you don't know how, but you've studied their words and you've tried to, you know, tried on their teachings. And slowly, you know, there's this way that it penetrates. And I thought that was a lovely way of looking at how the ancestors are supporting us. So I'm getting there with the ancestors. Does anyone else have any other comment, things they want to bring up before we have tea? Okay. Thank you so much.
Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them.
Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to end them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. Ceremony with lots of flowers out in the courtyard. It's a great
springtime event, and then after the ceremony is a nice party with cake and treats and get together. So sign up for Sesshin out there, and if you can't come to Sesshin, put the Sunday afternoon party on your schedule. Any other announcements?
I found a ring in the restroom. Has anybody misplaced the ring? It'll be in the lost and found in the office if anybody asks. Thank you.
Sally?
We just started a scholarship program, and what that covers is the cost of classes that have a paid teacher in it for a Sangha member that might not be able to afford the full price. So if you just have a little bit of extra money, it would be very appreciated. There's an envelope right on the donation box, and you can put it in a donation box.
Let's have some tea outside.